Welcome to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast in which we speak with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. Brat TV is an independent producer of scripted series for Gen Z audiences on many platforms, from YouTube to Samsung TVs. So perhaps it's only natural that the company announced today it's bringing on a strategic investor who knows all too well how to blaze his own trail in Hollywood, the legendary Bob Shea, the force behind some of the most memorable film franchises from Lord of the Rings to Nightmare on Elm Street. Shea joins me with Brat TV co-founder Rob Fishman to discuss their new partnership and the state of the Brat venture. Welcome back to Strictly Business, where I'm joined by Brat TV's Rob Fishman and Bob Shea, best known as the founder of New Line Cinema and the director, producer, and distributor of about 600 movies over the course of a career that began in 1967. At the age of 82, he's signed on as a strategic investor to Brat. And so I'm going to start with a simple question for you, Bob. Why? I mean, it's no surprise you continue to produce movies, but this isn't the kind of thing I'd peg you to be involved in.
Well, it's no question that making movies is in my blood. And so when I saw what Rob was doing, it really excited me because it was what New Line started doing in its own right, which was to find audience niches that weren't being well taken care of, and to try to understand them, to be a part of them, and to cater to them in a way that would make good business, that would interest advertisers, and that also would be worthwhile for people to spend their time and maybe even their money on. So it came out of the blue sky, in the sense that it was actually a match that was created by Goldman Sachs, who is both ours and Brat's investment banker. And they put together this arrangement. Rob and I have been getting along well together. I just met his partner Darren, and I'm looking forward to a dynamic and creative association where I can lend expertise, history. And in my case, also to make an investment to put my wallet where my mouth and intentions are, and I only hope that the next few years are going to be very salutary, and that we'll have a lot of exciting things and a big customer base, and that things are going to go smoothly. We know that doesn't always happen, but we're ready, willing, and able.
Got it. So Rob, what was Goldman Sachs' pitch to you? How did they introduce you to Bob, and what did they say he could bring to the table?
Yeah, so late in the spring of this past year, the folks at Goldman, who we've gotten to know over the years, had mentioned, hey, you know, we've been talking to Bob about some new media opportunities. I think they surfaced our company, and he said he was interested in meeting, and we ended up getting together at Bob's house in Los Angeles and had a very kind of productive introductory conversation where I explained to him what we were working on, heard a little bit more about his esteemed career, of course, which I'd read about previously. And then, you know, Bob actually mentioned he was going to New York the next day, and I was coincidentally going to New York later that week. And so while we've both been on the East Coast a little bit, we've had a series of lunch meetings where Bob's actually, he didn't mention, but he's a great chef and prepares all kinds of wonderful concoctions and dishes. And so I've been treated to not only interesting and, very helpful and conversations, but also great meals. And over the course of the summer, you know, we started to talk about if there was a possibility of working together. And then, as of this announcement, I guess we're doing that formally. So the genesis of it was very informal, but it's now turned into an exciting and formal partnership.
Sounds good. Bob, you're a movie guy. Brat TV doesn't make movies. So what is it that you feel that you bring to Brat TV in terms of, as you mentioned, expertise and history? Talk about how you're approaching this new venture.
Well, for starters, it goes back a little bit to the cooking metaphor. I do think that making a movie is like putting a meal on the table, and so long as you don't have too much spice or it's not too boring, it could be something that other people will enjoy. One of my great thrills is a corny word for it, but it is, that I have in my life is to turn other people on, and I've tried to do it in a number of ways. And so the idea is, I think most movie makers feel that way too. They don't just make the movies for themselves; they make it for the audience that they're trying to interest. And so that if I can come up with something that turns people on, that it very much excites me. The thing that brought me to Rob was that I and to Brad altogether was really, it is true that they're not making movies per se, but it's another thing that really excites me these days. I never was much of I was a television guy in the 50s when that was what you did. You went to the movie theaters and paid a quarter to go and see two serials and a feature film. But when television came on, that was a whole different experience. And it was the medium was very much the message. And I think now, again, the medium is kind of the message in the sense that television and movies have merged. Sure, the pandemic has been a big catalyst for merging television and motion pictures. But nevertheless, this idea of now streaming, and it's something that didn't exist when television first got started. Of course, I mean, there was your show was on a half hour one day a week, and that was just it. But now the ability to take a different sort of format to the delivery of the information and entertainment has really merged these two things into a much broader spectrum of entertainment and time that's being filled. And I don't now see that there's that much of a difference between television and movies, except for the idea of having to go to a theater and having to park and do all the things. Sure, going to theater is fun. Sure, the projection is better. But I am this collateral to what I was just describing about my interest in the merger between television and movies is also the way television has developed technologically to being very close to what I used to go to smaller art theaters in New York, for instance. The screens at the theaters that I went to, I won't tell you which ones they were, but they were little screens. They were almost big television sets, so that there was a possibility that there might be more of a merger, and that the actual unique experience of going to a movie theater is somewhat obviated now by the incredible delivery system that electronics have given us to put in our homes. And if you have an 80-inch screen, as I said, I won't tell you who has 80-inch movie screens in theaters in New York, but believe me, there were plenty of them, certainly at the beginning when video projection was in its infancy as well. And so if there is a good reason to still go to movie theaters, I think that the idea of releasing things first in theaters and then following up with being able to use the advertising and marketing to a subsequent showing on premium television, because it's what we call it whatever you want. It's not really television; it's sort of home entertainment. It's just really what they originally started calling television when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And that it's become a much bigger universe than we had access to a long time ago. So I'm accepting home entertainment as a reasonable, viable, and at times a proper way to see something, even in its original form. Sure, as I suggested, there are movies that you want to be sure you see in a theater, just because the experience is different than sitting in your home. But on the other hand, sitting in your home is not so terrible, especially in this day and age. And you get to have access to a lot more material, and you start seeing things that you wouldn't necessarily see because of all of the inconvenience of getting in a car and buying a ticket and all that stuff. I wouldn't say disdain, but my suspicion of dealing in television has been abated in large measure, and I'm delighted to have the television technology that's available to be bona fide home entertainment these days.
Got it. So Rob, walk us through, for those who don't know, the Brat TV elevator pitch and what this venture is all about.
Certainly. So we started the company in 2017, and the idea was to be a little bit of a modern television channel or network. And I think we wanted to be half in kind of the past and half in the future, and, you know, settle on something that made sense in the present. And so where we saw a number of white spaces were for this younger generation, you know, who folks call Gen Z. They didn't grow up watching television. They're not necessarily even cord cutters. They're cord nevers. They have very little familiarity with all of the kind of cable networks that we all grew up watching. So what they do watch a lot is user-generated content on apps like TikTok and Instagram. And so, you know, our thought was, what if we could develop basically a TV channel called Brat TV, a nod to the, you know, John Hughes Brat Pack, the films of a few decades ago, and take some of the talent who these audiences see on TikTok, whether that's, someone like Dixie D'Amelio, who was in one of our shows, or, people, dancers, performers, actresses, and feature them in scripted television shows, but put those shows for free, primarily on YouTube. And so we're one of the few kind of purveyors of what I would call, you know, premium for YouTube, at least premium television, where we're making scripted narrative entertainment shows like Chicken Girls and Attaway General and Total Eclipse that feature young actors and actresses from the internet who we feature in television like shows. And I think that the success over the last few years has been to establish that kind of household name, that household network that has a reliable slate of television shows that kind of bridges the gap between, hey, you know, I don't have to find this on a streaming service I may not have. It's on YouTube, which I as the viewer watch all the time. It features talent that I know, but it infuses the sort of production values and things that make television and storytelling fun to watch, and hopefully gives our viewers the best of both worlds. So we've grown in a bunch of interesting directions since then, but at its core, I look at us really as a modern kind of TV network that produces shows that you know, viewers hopefully take a shine to.
But of course, you're not producing for, you know, CBS or FX. You're producing for Peacock, Snapchat, you know, Samsung, yep. All sorts of pretty big companies. What is it like nowadays, sort of operating as an independent producer among all these giants?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And I think, you know, probably and some of the things, you know, Bob has talked to us about in terms of, you know, marrying distribution with these interesting content opportunities is true now. So you have a whole host of subscription services like Netflix, you have ad-supported services like a Samsung or to some extent Peacock, you have, you know, free social services like Snapchat. And so part of our job is to, you know, kind of marry the content experience to the delivery mechanism. So on a platform like Snapchat, we have a popular series called Past Your Bedtime, which airs three times a week. It's a kind of Gen Z culture and gossip show that's hosted and has done really well there. On a platform like Samsung, where they're actually recreating the experience of, you know, live linear TV channels, we've taken our library of scripted shows and stitched those into a 24-hour programming network that's a little bit more like, you know, what you used to see on the TV grid 20 years ago. So I think that you have to be nimble both in what you choose to produce and in how you display it. And, you know, that's certainly been a challenge, but I think also an opportunity over the last few years, where there are a lot more ways to present what you're making, a lot more opportunities to make different things, and, you know, ultimately to reap rewards and revenue from displaying in all of these different environments.
We'll be right back with more with Rob Fishman and Bob Shea in just a moment. Welcome back to Strictly Business, where we're talking with Rob Fishman of Brat TV and Bob Shea, best known as the founder of New Line Cinema. Bob, no one has traveled the road of the independent the way you did at New Line. As you look at the road Brat is traveling, are there similarities or differences in terms of the challenge Brat faces that you did way back with New Line?
Yeah, well, there is a very clear synchronicity in, because what we were trying to do when we started New Line is to provide a programming that sometimes was just a venue and sometimes was actually a movies that we could get into theaters that was particularly interesting to a group of audience, which were people that were around my age at that time. I was like 27 when I got started, that were not being well served by the media that was available at that time. And for us, we used to call our movies dating movies. Why? Because who wants to sit home with your parents watching I Love Lucy and Milton Berle's show when you can go out with a girl that you like a lot, maybe put your arm around her in a theater and be in your own place and have your own privacy, which at that time was movie theaters. And that was why movie theaters continued to prosper then. And I see what Rob and Brad are doing and have done up to even now is to find stories and ways to tell them that are kind of private and understandable mostly by the specific audience that they're trying to reach, which their advertisers, fortunately for us, are also interested in reaching, that become very loyal customers. And that to me, it just resonates all over again. These were the leftovers, if you will, the stuff that doesn't have the big movie stars usually, doesn't have the huge special effects, but has the funny jokes, it has the charm, new talent, and that has the inside track on exactly who your friends are interested in, that are not being paid as much attention to by the big companies because they have a different agenda. They need movies for movie theaters, and they need big productions and all of that stuff. What we want is just a few good laughs, some warm feelings, you know, a little bit of romance. And well, Rob will tell you a bit more about that than I do. But the idea that they are picking up a sort of the thread that New Line graduated from, because there are in fact still lots of entertainment topics and talent that are not being not being hired because of just what they have to offer, that there's plenty of room for new ideas, new programming, and innovation. That's what attracted me.
Makes sense. So Rob, in terms of your company, it's a little unusual in the sense it's a venture-backed programmer for television. You don't see that much of those. You know, you've raised about $45 million in the past from investors, including Anchorage Capital, Advanced Capital. Here you've got Bob coming in as a strategic investor. So what is your, where are you at right now in terms of, you know, next rounds of financing? What does that road ahead look like?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. And, you know, we did take a venture backed approach, which was, you know, to raise a bunch of capital, which I guess in, you know, movie terms allowed us to deficit finance a lot of what we were producing. Because at the end of the day, we needed to get a slate of content up early on and make all of our shows. So, you know, raising financing from venture capitalists allowed us to produce, you know, a dozen original series that we launched, and also allowed us to hire an advertising team and all the, you know, corporate folks who work with us. So I think that it was necessary to kind of jumpstart this new network. You know, we're in a fortunate place now where, you know, revenue has grown quickly from 2020 to 2021. We ended 2020 with about $15 million in top line revenue. And this year we're hoping to get to about 35. So we've seen a really nice jump. And we've also broken into profitability, which, you know, had been a goal of ours and allows us to be self-sustaining and you know, keep the company in good order. Obviously working with Bob here was very opportunistic, and I think the product of both sides wanting to partner together. And, you know, that investment will allow us to grow even more quickly in you know, ways we've been thinking of down the line. But I think, you know, for us now, the challenge becomes, how do we take this kind of TV brand that exists online and grow it into, you know, even more of a household name with a bunch of different divisions and tentacles and, you know, that reaches our consumer in a number of different ways. And so we've started doing more production projects with third-party partners. Like, we're working quite a bit with the Facebook family of apps on a series of projects with Instagram, where we're taking a number of these top Gen Z creators and helping them produce original series on their own channels. You can see on folks like Sean Does Magic, who's a really great magician, or the Schlove family, which is a you know, great family of creators. And so we're helping them produce original content, both for longer form episodes on Instagram TV and also with Reels videos. And then, you know, we're working with, we actually partnered with MGM a few years ago to develop and sell original television shows. And so that's been going well. And so, you know, I think our goal now is to find, I mean, to kind of build and double down on the core business, but find really interesting expansion opportunities that we can take some of the capital that we've, you know, now been able to drive and reinvest that into growth.
And I'm also curious about working with all this influencer talent. Here we are having this conversation a day after Netflix signed Addison Rae to a talent deal. And you mentioned Dixie D'Amelio, you know, she and her even more famous sister have their own, you know, Kardashian type show on Hulu. So is Hollywood waking up to where you've been all along? And if they're successful, does that actually become problematic for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, so our previous venture, which was became part of Twitter in 2015, really worked very closely with the Vine stars and served as kind of a advertising market. And so we've worked with digital talent now for a bunch of years. And I do think that Hollywood is kind of finally waking up to the power and appeal of talent. And it's an interesting question, because, you know, in some ways these talent pose an almost existential threat to Hollywood, because they don't really need the industry to become popular, right? It's kind of the opposite of a kid coming to Hollywood and getting an agent and getting cast in a movie and needing the star system to become popular, right? They start an account on Instagram or TikTok. They might be in their hometown. And, you know, you look at the D'Amelios or Addison Rae, and these folks have grown so big so quickly. And, you know, only recently, as you can see in, say, like the D'Amelio show, only more recently, you know, had to link up with the industry to kind of, you know, grow their careers. And in a way, that the whole process is a bit inverted. And so, look, we, you know, we worked with Dixie D'Amelio. She was her first acting job was on our show, Attaway General. We had talked to Addison a long time ago. Her younger brother, Enzo, is actually in one of our shows, Chicken Girls. And so we get to work with their family as well. But our job in a way is to kind of, I think, discover and employ a lot of these young performers before they, you know, sign a multi-year Netflix deal or even concurrently. I mean, a nice example is, you know, we really like the movie To All the Boys I've Loved Before on Netflix, and Anna Cathcart, who played the younger sister on that popular movie on Netflix, we reached out to a few years ago, and she starred in a Brat TV show called Zoe Valentine and then went back to, you know, do another Netflix show. So it's not always one or the other, and we're certainly not exclusive with our talent. And we'd love to see them, you know, grow and expand in all kinds of different ways. I think, you know, to answer your question, there is certainly a lot more signing of this form of talent, whether those are, you know, with new management firms or the existing, you know, big three agencies. And so in some cases that makes it harder to work with talent because there's a lot more infrastructure around them. But in some cases, you know, of course it can be easier because they're surrounded by professional representation. So I do think, you know, the last thing I'll say on that point is we see a lot of the Netflixes of the world kind of doing reality shows with talent who's grown online. We see still a lot less of, you know, casting in more traditional roles, which is primarily what we do. And I think one of the fun things for talent who are on our shows is that they get to play a character and kind of have that traditional Hollywood experience that, you know, Bob in a way was talking about with early movies. And so we still feel like we're kind of a unique destination for talent from the internet to come play a character and work on a set and, you know, not just have to be themselves.
Rob, you also have an interesting model where the Brat brand shows up on so many different platforms. I know you just made a deal that added almost your entire archives to Peacock. How do all these platforms coexist? Explain sort of the windowing strategy here.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think we're in a time of upheaval and consolidation and, you know, general confusion in the media industry. So navigating that as a content creator is challenging. And I imagine even more so for people who are viewers at home. But, you know, our windowing strategy, so to speak, is to release content first and foremost on free social networks like YouTube and Snapchat and Instagram, where we sell advertising directly to support that content. Thereafter, the kind of like second window, which is multifarious, is that content gets recut into more traditional 22-minute TV episodes and released on AVOD platforms, advertising video on demand, like Tubi or Roku or Amazon Prime Video. And then also released as part of our 24-hour live linear channels on places like Samsung televisions or Vizio. And then, you know, to a certain extent, we'll do deals with folks like Hulu, where you can watch the programming as part of a, you know, licensing fee. And that kind of second window, as you kind of hinted at, is quite broad and encompasses a number of viewing destinations. The deals we've done with those folks are all non-exclusive. So in a way, yes, you can kind of access and tap the same content that's on YouTube everywhere else. And you know, that for us is the best strategy because we recoup revenue from each of those channels. As to how that will play out in the future, you know, I just don't know. I think it's an interesting time and space where even, you know, putting aside Brat TV shows, there are certain, you know, famous shows from 10 years ago where you can type it into your Apple TV and there's like seven different places that you can watch the same thing. You know, I think that's why we are obviously with HBO Max and Discovery merging or MGM, who we worked with, and Amazon merging. I think some of that consolidation will, you know, continue happening and continue making sense because having overlapping services where, yes, you can see the same programming is, you know, maybe good for people like us because there are a lot of places we can work with. But, I don't know how that works exactly for the viewer.
One last question, and I'll give this to you, Bob. I'd be remiss in not asking what you think of the state of the movie business today. Just there's obviously incredible disruption with the theaters right now with COVID. The streaming service is obviously taking a lot on. How do you see it? Because you're still very much in that game.
Yeah, well, I obviously I'm as confused as everybody else, and it's almost like a strange renaissance, and things are merging in such a interesting way that I don't think the where they're going to land together. I'm guardedly excited about it. I am. I feel very akin to exhibitors. I've been living with them my whole life. Sometimes it's been wonderful experience, and sometimes it's been terrible. But that was sort of what you had to live with. It was like you know, coal for your stove. And now that the technology and evolution and innovation have once again approached the entertainment area, I think the entertainment area has to deal with it in terms of people still wanting to be entertained and to be stimulated and to be turned on, just like books still are around and regular television is still around. I don't think there's going to be any diminution in people's interest in seeing acting and presentations and talent that is easy to access, is not overly expensive, and offers just another opportunity for you to spend your leisure time in a fruitful way. So I'm sorry to see the disruption and the in some cases the you know, this disappointment that the circumstances and history have brought to the industry. But on the other hand, I'm still as enthusiastic as I ever have been about working with people who want to entertain the world. And that's what I think that Brad and Rob and his whole team are inspired to do. I think it's not just let's make some money and move on. I think they're seriously interested in nurturing, cultivating, and in a way, spiritually acquiring an audience base of younger people who are going to be really important to our civilization.
Well said, and I wish you well with this new venture and what you're continuing to do with the movie business. Rob, Bob, thanks for taking some time out.
All right,
Andy. Thanks for having us on.
This has been another episode of Strictly Business. Tune in next week for another helping of scintillating conversation with media movers and shakers. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes. Also, leave a review in Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing.